And coming up next on the stream of Free Radio, freakradio.org as usual, or on the archives, you're observing or listening to us, I should say, online, on computer, you can go to the HuffSantaCruz.org website and find us under Bathrobes, Pierre's, Broadsides, listening to the latest and lost shows. Case, it's February 9th, 2020. When you're listening to this show, or at least when the show is being aired, and a lot of stuff we're going to be playing from the last couple of weeks, brewing and stewing over the need to have shelter, the cold weather, the police seizures of property, and the attempts to reclaim the property, some of which are successful and some of which are not. We'll be following some more of the adventures of Cooper Russell and the former Washington Street encampment next to the former Loudon Nelson Community Center, now the Loudon Nelson Center for Privileged Folks, overseen by Izeth Ray, the supervisor there. No bathrooms unless you're in a program. For messy smells outside, I guess, but it does discourage those homeless folks from using the facilities. A report or two from Berkeley and a couple of other cities, hopefully, depending on how successful our phone calls are. And, of course, how long my energy continues before my steam runs out.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So there's another shitty council meeting coming up on Tuesday the 11th, day after tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Sunday. The closed session starts at noon, and then the general business session starts at 12:30. Then the evening session starts as it usually does at 7, but all that's on the evening session is the oral communications period. You would think this would mean that it would be the opportunity for people to have longer oral communications. But I will bet you dollars to donuts, as they say, that won't be happening. It'll be 2 minutes each, 30 minutes max, and really kiss any meaningful public comment goodbye. We didn't have a Friday agenda analysis session, which Councilmember Drew Glover usually throws, or frequently throws. He's canceled a couple of them. He explained this, and he gave us warning this time in advance, and he may have done so before as well, but he didn't give all of us warning, and some of us were a little miffed in the past, but not this time. Apparently he put it out on his Facebook and so forth, and good for him for doing that. Normally it's at 5:30 at the City Hall area on a Friday afternoon. It's usually very helpful to have an hour and a half if you want to go through the agenda items one by one, plus to hear, frankly, the comments of other people. You can find some past agenda-setting analysis discussions on the latest and lost shows section of the HuffSantaCruz.org website. And if that's something kind of hard to follow as I rattle along on this show, since you may not have a pencil and paper in hand, you can, if you subscribe to, or if you let me know you want to hear the announcements of the shows, which happen around the same time they come out on Thursday evening and Sunday morning, I'll put you on the email list if you're not there already, and you'll get a copy of the email, which also mentions where the show is archived, so you can go to that website more directly and perhaps more easily and find out what's cooking and get access to these other audios, which I think are helpful to be able to hear if the subjects interest you. On the agenda, there's in the morning, early afternoon, starting at 12:30, assuming you're not interested in the closed session, and I don't see much on the closed session. Last council session or two, I have not put in for the city council liability claims as presented by the actual people making the claims, because the summation indicates that it's a subject that I'm not terribly interested in. So, for example, this week, there's a claimant asking for $14,000 for property damage caused by a leak in the city water line. But you don't, if it has to do, for example, with police misconduct, you may see a person describing in more detail what actually happened to them, as well as leaving a contact number or email or address, which could be helpful, well, if you have an interest in the subject generally, but even more specifically and more relevantly, if you want to talk about this issue at City Council, to the City Council before they go into the closed doors, secret back room, closed session stuff, which you can do in open session. You can make a record of your concerns, admittedly, probably only for 2 minutes. I guess you could try to make a group presentation there, but haven't never seen that done. And therefore, it's useful to have that. I have requested that this be done on the City Council's agenda. That is to say that everybody who files a claim against the city gets the rest of the community gets a chance to see that claim in its entirety with all the contact information of the people who are making the claim, so that if you are members of the public, you want to get in touch with that person, or you need to find more information about it, or you want to speak about it even without getting in touch with the person, you can do so more knowledgeably and intelligently. But, of course, the City Council isn't interested in your knowledge and intelligence, so why should they bother to do that? It's also true you can get a copy of the claim by writing in advance to the city, but you kind of really have to fit it into a tight schedule. You'll only learn what these claims are on Friday morning. Usually they don't have it out on Thursday night, before the Tuesday City Council meeting, and they'll only get you a copy of it on Monday, if you specifically request it, or at least that's been my experience. So I've asked Mayor Cummings last Monday when I had a meeting with him if he would be willing to forward those claims. And all he said was he'll talk to the city attorney about it. When I tried to get him to commit himself to it, he refused. Or I should say he ducked, or he said he wouldn't. So that isn't done yet. Again, on any of these issues, they seem perhaps to anyone listening, they may seem to you to be rather technical and legalistic and sort of like, oh, do we have to jump through each of their tiny, tiny hoops? Why should we waste our time doing that? And you would be right in making such concerns and expressing them that way. But if you are following City Council activity, this is an example of something that needs to be corrected. And in order to correct it, you got to keep hammering on it. Although, you know, one only has a certain amount of hammering energy, hammering time, and hammering patience. So I seem to keep on hammering, so some of us just never learn, I guess. So there's a number of items on the consent agenda which you can probably get a chance to talk about at greater length if you make a request. Councilmember Glover is pretty good about that. Councilmember Brown generally has been okay about that with respect to requests I've made, in contrast to her violating other kinds of promises she's made to me repeatedly and then refused to follow up on. So you can usually, if you ask a city council member at the public mic, you say, I want this item removed from the agenda so it can be discussed in more detail, and so there'll be a staff report presented, and it needs to be removed from the agenda and voted on separately, not as one of a whole bunch of items on the consent agenda that just gets shoved through as one mass. So one of the items on the consent agenda is number 6, formation of a council cannabis subcommittee. It's the mayor to establish a cannabis subcommittee to work with the staff on policy recommendations for cannabis, including but not limited to taxation, on-site consumption, license transfers, and event permits. And what interests me is the on-site consumption. That's something that Nate Kennedy, who often sounds a bit more comical than anything else, but he has made some comments, some suggestions and comments that I find pertinent, as well as being way off the mark on others. And that is, of course, looking for places where people can recreationally or medicinally engage in marijuana vaping or smoking or eating. And there's no reason why that shouldn't be part of the recreational scene downtown. It probably will be, considering it's a financial boon to some businesses in the community, in spite of the hurdles being put up for cannabis cultivators. But here's the staff report, which is the best place to check on what's cooking. This has been submitted by Mayor Cummings. And so in this one area, whether it's I'm not sure the right word, psilocybin, mushrooms, herbs that have psycholytic properties, that have psychedelic properties, but that are natural and also have medicinal uses, is something he's been, to his credit, supporting. And he was able, through the obvious fact that he has a majority of 4, and the rest of the gang, the Watkins gang, jumped on board as well, probably not wishing to be considered too reactionary by the students. I mean, if that's, I don't know, who knows? Maybe they actually do have some sympathy for, some understanding of the usefulness of psychedelic drugs. I don't really think so, at least based upon the kinds of commentaries I've heard from Matthews, Watkins. I don't know much about Myers on this in this regard, but I don't think so. But they voted for it unanimously last council meeting to allow for it being the lowest enforcement priority for the police if you're over 21, and I guess they're being used in private or something. That was the standard used for medical marijuana, or actually even for recreational marijuana. I think it was for both. I could be wrong about that. Again, this was around the time when individuals and organizations about 15 years ago were pushing for real decriminalization of marijuana at a statewide level and in various cities as a sort of a trial effort with some funding from, I think, Sorbus was financially supporting this. Not that I'm a big fan of his in some respects, but people who support ending the drug war, I'm on their team in that regard, no matter how reactionary they are on other issues, because I think it's the right position to take. The issue coming up on the current agenda is to, as I said before, discussion about license transfers, where and why, what should be permitted for on-site consumption, concerns from the cannabis industry around high taxation, making business difficult in the community. And this is for the interest in forming a cannabis subcommittee. So this is all about forming a cannabis subcommittee. It isn't really much. In other words, it's just more talk. And sometimes talk leads to action. And because there seems to be a kind of action last week or last 2 weeks ago, regarding at least lowest enforcement of psilocybin, mushrooms, and so forth, that I thought maybe that this might be the case too, but it doesn't. It's just the formation of a subcommittee. And there's nothing the city council likes better than to form subcommittees and a little group so they can meet and chatter on and report back and then chatter some more and direct the staff to look into more things and so forth. But actually doing something, taking the lead, stopping the police from harassing people who are using these substances, doing such crimes as, you know, sleeping in a park after dark. That's something they just, that requires deeper study, you know, that sort of thing. So that's one of the items on the city council's agenda. I'm going to try to skip ahead here because haven't seen much in previous lookovers of this agenda that I think is worth telling you about. And to send a letter from the mayor to Santa Clara County for the protecting the Ama Mutsun tribal band sacred land of Juristak. And, you know, I know nothing about this tribe, but I tend to have a generic sort of knee-jerk sympathy for Native American traditional rights. But all it is a letter. You know, okay, fine. How about sending a task force to stop the bulldozers or whatever the heck is going up there? That's never going to happen. Then we have, that's item 7. Item 8, the UCSC graduate student strike, which is apparently going to be intensified on Monday. It's up there on campus for all you folks tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Sunday. Motion to direct the mayor to write to the University of California administration to acknowledge how difficult it is for UCSC graduate students to try to live in a community where the cost of rent far outstrips their salaries. This is such horseshit. Not because it isn't true, it is. But it's the height of hypocrisy to have a city council which refuses to enact just eviction protection and rent control here locally in any meaningful way, to give, you know, its tisk, 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 tut, tut, tut to the University of California, you know. In other words, it's part of this syndrome. Do it. We can always, you know, direct other people to do what we ourselves don't do because we don't have to deal with pressure from large real estate interests and out of the city organizations like, I don't know, apartment owners associations and so forth. It's worth noting that the council says, as is, you know, things are bad for students too. We support the current UCSC graduate student strike. I don't know how they support it other than saying we support it, which Huff has the same problem. The group I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, you know, we issue these little manifestos, which often don't get past the verbal stage at our meetings. But, you know, we support opening up the bathrooms at Loudoun Nelson. Now, when we go down there and actually open up a bathroom, as we did, for a period of time last year, because in spite of Izeth Ray's locking them down to the undeserving and presumably dirty and criminal elements of the community, although she insists it was not really about homeless. It was about bad behavior, even though it affects everybody's ordinary bathroom behavior. Anyway, so this is an item 8, UCSC graduate student grade strike. Good. I'd say if you want to support it, go up there and grab a picket sign. Now, Cummings did do this. Of course, his base is on the campus, so he'd better get his ass up there to do that. Of course, once his friend, or his, I should say his friend, because I don't know how friendly these two are, Cummings and Glover, as I'm talking about, and Crone, and Brown, for that matter, once Crone and Glover are either of them a recall, as I've said before in past meetings, Cummings' power to be any kind of a pivotal person on city council completely dissolves. He's no longer there because there'll be a right winger on the council. Now you say, oh, well, wait a minute, there are going to be some, you know, great choices. What about Tim Fitzmaurice? You know, what about Don Lane? You know, and what about Catherine Byers? Aren't these great old progressives from historic times? The answer is no, they're not. At one time, they were progressives. Once they got into power, they reverted to the colors of the people who donated money to their cause and to the quality of the neighborhood they lived in on the west side. They, at least on homeless and civil rights issues, they did. So, then there's an item 9, which actually came up when Councilmember Cummings and I were chatting this last Monday, because the issue for me was that Cummings seems to be shoving quickly, very quickly past an item on the city council which allows council members who can't get items on city council agendas to force the mayor, who sets the agenda, to put those items on the next agenda by a majority vote. This became a sore point for Watkins, who felt this former mayor, who felt she was being treated badly because people were trying to work around her stonewalling of the progressive majority's items. Or in some cases the majority, in some cases the minority, but anyway, the progressive items. Adequate shelter, oversight of police, places for RVs to park, and so forth. Impacts poor people, but that enrages the extreme right wing here in Santa Cruz. Apparently there was some quick and dirty deal, I am still not entirely clear on this, that was passed in recent times, in the last few months, that essentially drained the power of the city council members, supposedly, to be able to vote on one city council agenda once an item had been repeatedly shoved away from the agenda by the mayor, who meets secretly and privately with the city manager and the heads of staff before the city council meeting a week in advance to create the agenda, independent of any of the wishes of the council members. I mean, the mayor will hear them, but she decides or he decides whatever they want to do with it. This would force them to do it, to put an item on the agenda if the council majority says, put the damn thing on the agenda. We may not vote for it, but at least we have a right to hear it and discuss it, and the community has a right to see that too. Well, that it was customarily done at the city council meeting scheduling section of the agenda, which was usually at the end of the agenda. And so if something could come up during the meeting that became clear needed to be put on the agenda, some council members would try to do this. But this apparently upset Councilmember Watkins and others. So the policy changed so that apparently you can't do that anymore. You can just schedule meetings during this session of this agenda item period, meetings of future subcommittees and so forth. You can't put agenda items on the agenda, or at least that is not mentioned as something that happens during this particular period of time. And I brought this up with Cummings because he seemed to be, you know, going right along with this steamroller, which says, in essence, if the mayor doesn't like your item and it doesn't get on the agenda, and you can't put it on the agenda anywhere else, even if you got four people who want to put it on the agenda who have actually were voted in to the city council. So this is particularly important since you have essentially a series of right-wing mayors. You have had in the last few years, and it looks like you will for the next few years, because after Cummings, there's going to be Myers, who was foolishly appointed voted in by the council, not by the community, but by the council as the vice mayor, and so presumptively the next mayor, probably the next mayor next year. They change mayors every year without a city vote, of course. So this is an item. Item 9 on this council consent agenda says they did get advised by the city attorney that you can bring items up at the agenda, on the council session, and I think Cummings agreed with me on this, really any time during the city council meeting, regardless of whether Cynthia Matthews likes it or not, or regardless of whether the mayor, whoever the mayor is, likes it or not. And the council can then vote as to whether they want to put that next item on the agenda. You don't need to do it at a special time, so maybe everything is rosy, but the problem we're seeing, of course, is that the council members who are being recalled or who have to deal with a recall election aren't willing to take these kinds of risks to put items on the agenda. At least they don't seem to have been. At least Glover and Crone have had that problem recently, or I think we have had that problem with them. There's a bunch of other stuff on the City Council consent agenda, which I'm going to pass over. You can find it online. Police Officers Association Memorandum of Understanding, probably important to look at in detail, but I'm not doing that. Approving a budget adjustment for the San Lorenzo Levee Buttress Project, San Lorenzo River culvert installation. You say, how boring, what the hell is that all about, who cares? Some of it, however, is very expensive, $2.2 million to appropriate funds for example, a wastewater treatment facility. You probably need to look at that pretty closely to see who's getting it. Is it a sole source deal, or did it get it bid out for, and so forth? But moving on to the end of the consent agenda, which has 16 items in it, and I remind you, you will not be able to talk on those items, and you will not be able to remove them without permission from a city council. And I said, well, you know, Brown and Glover will likely give you permission. Yeah, but you shouldn't have to wait for that. And many, many times in the past, council members have refused to give permission or declined to do that. And so members of the public are left watching, you know, the band march on without their democratic participation or even information about what's going on. General business has the Harvey West Pool Subcommittee report of $50,000 to appropriate from the park tax fund for a feasibility analysis to hire a consultant. Doesn't sound good, but I don't know. Wireless cell facilities. This is an issue that one of our Huff members was very concerned about. I think James, this is to publish an ordinance amending a section to allow small cell wire facilities, which he feels, I think, is very bad. I don't have a lot of details on it. Can't tell you much about it. Motion to direct staff to work with ongoing council. The number 19 is the Beach Flats Impact Fund. Looks like they're going to establish a Beach Flats Impact Fund by establishing a policy framework, feasibility, and implementation plan. You know, I'm sorry. Whenever that they start chattering about these abstractions prior to actually doing anything, I tune out, and that may be the idea. If we tune out, they do whatever they want. Then finally, there's warming center funding. That's proposal and a draft agreement from the city attorney to proceed with, you know, finally giving $15,000, which is a tiny fraction of the, you know, million plus that they got from different, I think it was millions that they got from state agencies and from the shared with the county anyway. So they're kicking down a tiny bit to Brent Adams, who's actually probably definitely doing more on issues of storage than any of the city agencies that are much better funded or the nonprofits that they're funding. So it gives you some idea of what their real priorities are, which are to shovel this issue off to the side as much as possible and try to ignore it. And there are other issues on the council agenda, which I don't really have much knowledge of, so I can't really talk about them knowledgeably. And then in the evening, there is a 7 o'clock session that only has oral communication. And they're also going to declare, I think, Black History Month at the beginning of the city council. I'm a fan of Black History Month. I always enjoy hearing more about Black history. And it'd be nice to get some Black justice in the present as well. But, you know, hey, can't have everything. So I'm calling Keith McKenzie. Okay.
One second, I'm going to move along.
We're trying to talk to Keith McHenry, who's down at the Food Not Bombs meal.
Amazing, isn't it? That sounds freaking crazy.
hey, Keith. So you'll be at City Council on Tuesday. Is that still the plan? What's your idea?
The City Council's on Tuesday. Yeah. What about? I didn't make flyers for that. Did you see the other flyers?
I did, and I enjoyed them. I guess the reason I'm mentioning it is I'm doing an update on the council. I don't know if I'll be anywhere near the city council.
Just a second. Let me call you right back. You'll be in your house.
I can try and do that, but we're rolling in through the show, so do it as quickly as you can.
Well, just tell people to come to it.
You're not intending to bring food. That's the only issue I was asking about.
No, I'm not. Well, I'm getting another call. Plus, I've got. No, I won't be bringing food to that.
That's good. That's all I need to know.
Okay.
Thank you, man.
Great. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. So usually, at least the last couple of council meetings, Keith has been showing up with food. And, you know, there have been some presentations from people at Oral Communications. But essentially nothing has been on the agenda really for having to do with shelter issues. It's all been kept off the agenda. Even the Catch's attempt to put stuff on the agenda has been sidelined, presumably by the city manager, but certainly with the collusion of the mayor, since he could put something on the agenda if he wants, and he doesn't. That's something I didn't bring up at the meeting with him, which, by the way, if you want to hear that meeting, you can go online and you can hear it there. It's about 25 minutes long, only covers a few subjects. I'm afraid I may be pulling in my horns a little. I'm being told by folks that I'm a bit too outspoken, particularly when I'm ragging on people who are my allies, which happens on occasion because I have strong opinions, I guess, and I may speak out of turn in the sense of being insufficiently appreciative and giving people due recognition for what they do. Although I think I do that, but maybe I don't do what I should be doing. Noodoop-a-doop. But when I have a difference of opinion and I see people not doing what they said they were going to do, and it's happening again and again for an organization, I'm getting a little critical of the union, of Santa Cruz Homeless Union, in some respects. There are a number of things they are doing and have done and should be given credit for, and I continue to say this. particularly, for example, the Desiree Quintero campground that got set up for 5 days. And it was actually quite amazing that that got done. The fact that different people have been advised of their rights, have been signed up for membership in this, that the membership of the Santa Cruz Union is spread all over the state and all over the country in many respects, so thanks to the organizing work of people like Anthony Prince, Lucero Luna, Alicia Cool. I mean, these are true and real things. Wes White and Salinas, that's kind of where it began, as far as I see. And what is the Santa Cruz Homeless Union? Well, it's a group that, at least part of it, meets every Sunday at 5. I don't know if I'm going to be there today at 5, but you can go down there at the post office right next to the Food Not Bombs meal. And the voice you just heard on the phone, Keith McHenry, is often sort of at the center of the meeting. But he's also trying to do two or three things at the same time. He runs a meal. He organizes stuff at the same time. He's talking with other Food Not Bombs organizations throughout the world, you know. At least he's aware of them. And he's also trying to be helpful to address nasty attempts to criminalize homeless people here in Santa Cruz, which is the police chief's new 7-point program to essentially work around the Boise versus Martin protections that the federal courts finally imposed, at least in the western states, on police departments that are trying to run homeless people away. And police departments, of course, are in some extent ignoring the courts or essentially doing the same thing but using different ordinances, but saying, oh, we're not really going after someone for sleeping. They had too much property possession with them. That's it. They were in the park at the wrong time. We offered them a shelter bed, but they refused to go because it meant they had to leave all their property behind. Oh, dear. So they have a lot of excuses as to why they can continue to criminalize homeless people outside, bully them, shovel them around based upon priorities that have really nothing to do in importance, and there's no comparison between survival needs of homeless people and the aesthetic demands or the property rights of merchants, businesses, corporate real estate interests, amusement park owners, such as the Boardwalk, and so forth. The event that Keith was talking about that he has put out a flyer for, and I think you may be able to find it online. If you can't find it now, you'll find it shortly. And that is two things are coming up. There's a coffee clutch on Wednesday morning. I think it's at 7:30. I better figure it out because I'm supposed to be there at City Hall, in front of City Hall. It's going to be probably near the City Hall offices. And it's going to be people are invited to come and have some coffee or maybe soup, depending on what we can make available. And we'll also have voter registration forms for people who want to fight the recall of the two council members who show some interest in homeless people's civil rights and their survival needs. But then for that reason, that's being used as a club to shovel them and bang them and cattle herd them out of office. But they really think, as I said, they really think the issue is rent control. They don't want those people on the board because, you know, if Cummings ever gets any of his balls back, he will support rent control. But or if he doesn't, the campus students will throw his ass out. At least that's what I would hope they would do with any council member. That would happen that way. At 7:30 on Wednesday morning, we'll be down there essentially raising issues outside council members and the city manager's offices around why the hell aren't they opening up the vacant properties that Governor Newsom has recommended be done for camping? Why isn't the Ross Camp area reopened if necessary? Why aren't other areas opened up? Instead, you have the Armory closing down March, 18th, 15th, something like that. And right now you have virtually no property. You've already closed the River Street campground. Not that it was ever much of a campground, only for 60 people or so at an exorbitant cost. But, you know, even these tiny patchwork excuses they use are just disappearing. So we're going to be raising those issues there, and we're going to be essentially also inviting people to come in and sign up to talk to council members and to talk to heads of staff who could do something about these issues, or simply to talk to each other to figure out what we all should do next. So that's one way of starting to address the issue. That's going to be 7:30 on Wednesday, February 12th. And later on the 12th, there's a Huff meeting at noon at the Sub Rosa. And there's also a forum at 3:15 at Sub Rosa. That will be a forum on, that's the forum that Keith mentioned is going to be highlighted on the flyer. And the flyer reads, Dignity Not Doorways, Wednesday, February 12th, 3 to 4:45 p.m., Sub Rosa, 703 Pacific Avenue, the Sub Rosa Community Space. Within the following week, the meeting at Wednesday will be at 4:30, and it'll be at the Resource Center for Nonviolence with a free meal at both meetings. And it reads, Organizing for Our Rights. Here's Police Chief Andy Mills is advocating a change in the camping law, making it illegal to pitch a tent before 10 at night or after 7 in the morning, increasing penalties for trespassing, declaring most of Pacific Avenue a park subject to curfews, and would give the police the power to order those vacating the anti-homeless laws to choose between working for the police for cleaning these streets or go to jail. We can unite to resist preparing a strategy of nonviolent civil disobedience, building solidarity between those with housing and those who are unhoused. There will be discussion of forming self-managed survival camps, building occupations, and protests demanding the civil rights of everyone. Sounds good to me. I've been talking about that for a long time and probably will continue to chatter on about it. Probably doing very little myself other than that, but I think it's a good idea, and I'm supportive of that. I'm not quite sure what that quite means, other than continuing to talk about it and maybe showing up when it happens. Musical break time, but you're going to be hearing the song Mar-a-Lagoville. I think I played this one before, by the Freedom Toast. It's Don Caron's multi-personality group. And here are the lyrics, because you're going to be hearing it sung, but here's what they are. Nibbling on Big Macs, coking the six-packs, making decisions that I will rescind, growling at fake news, singing the shift blues, and otherwise farting into the wind. Wasting away again in Mar-a-Lagoville, searching for some woman I can assault. Some people claim I really should be ashamed, but I know there's no way it's my fault. I've had no affection since the election, but maybe that tall girl can bring me to life. She looks like a beauty, a Slovenian cutie. Oh, wait, I just realized that's only my wife. Wasting away again in Mar-a-Lagoville, searching for Barack policies I can halt. That was my aim, clearly Obama's to blame, because I know nothing's ever my fault. I gave a grim, firm order to seal up the border. Got to stop letting all those Mexicans through. So what if the crops rot? I still do the foxtrot. I'm not really sure if that is even true. Wasting away in Mar-a-Lagoville, searching for those facts I can label with alt. Some people claim there is a Putin to blame. I say no, but that don't mean it's my fault. Yes, and some people claim Vladimir Putin's to blame, but I know nothing's ever my fault.
Nibbling on Big Macs, coke in the six packs, making decisions that I would rescind, growling at fake news, singing the shift blues, and otherwise farting into the wind. Wasting away again in Mar-a-Lagoville, searching for some woman I can assault. Some people claim I really should be since the election. But maybe that tall girl can bring me the light. She looks like a beauty, a Slovenian cutie. Oh wait, I just realized that's only my wife. Wasting away again in Mar-a-Lago Hill, searching for Barack policies I can know. That was my aim, clearly Obama's to blame. 'Cause I know nothing's ever my fault. Seal up the border. Gotta stop letting all those Mexicans through. So what if the crop's right? I can still do the foxtrot. I'm not really sure if that is even true. Wasting away again. Searching for those facts I can label with thought. Some people claim that there is Putin to blame. I say no, but that don't mean it's my fault. Yes, and some people claim Vladimir Putin's to blame.
On the line with me now is Brent Adams, who's running what he now calls, give me the new name, Brent.
Footbridge Services Center.
Thank you. And that covers storage, it covers showers, it covers laundry. What else?
Electrical charging and donation items.
Great. And this is all to be found at?
150 Elker Street, Suite H. But for people on foot and bicycles, it's at the end of the Felker or footbridge up by Ross. We're on the east shore of the mighty San Lorenzo, right at the cul-de-sac.
Now, when I last spoke to you, Brent, we had a kind of a quick chat at the last, what I call the shitty council meeting, about, you know, the kinds of problems you were experiencing from unknown vandals. How's that going?
We had a shuttle van that's been under attack. It's hard to know, though, who... Why anti-homeless, pro-homeless, homeless themselves, you know, it's a kind of, some of the other offices had extremely expensive architectural plate glass windows that were smashed.
Oh, boy.
Not our office, but we took it as our own because we are, I'm taking responsibility for the entire office park here. I'm the kind of de facto site manager, guardian. There's no, because they sold it, we don't have a, well, I shouldn't say too much, but kind of babysit the spot. Besides that, a lot of, you know, our fences have been cut. That's regular. Our shuttle has had the fuel line cut and windows smashed. The box truck had the windows smashed. And maybe you remember months ago, nearly 11, 10 months ago, all of our vehicles had their tires cut repeatedly. That was something under the radar. I let people know a little bit, but it felt like we were constantly being bombarded. But now it seems to have subsided a little bit. So happy about that.
Yeah, and are you getting much support from folks to help? I mean, you say you're taking responsibility for other windows broken in the building. Isn't that going to kind of take a chunk out of what you're able to provide to folks outside?
I'm not paying for the windows. In fact, I covered them up with big sheets of cardboard. It's up to either the tenant's insurance or the property owner is responsible. Or the, you know, but short of that, I'm not engaged in that conversation. Also, what occurred was a conversation about whether our so far, our office hasn't been damaged, and so we're feeling good at least about the security of our storage space. The thing that I needed to be delicate about is people have thought that our windows were being broken, that our storage program had been breached, but it had not.
Mm-hmm.
But we're so far not making a claim, and that hopefully that tide is washed through for now. Until, any wave of attacks. What we're doing right now, of course, is just celebrating year funding that we secured through Roland Reveille for the year's worth of laundry. That's huge because, I don't know, people seem to think that I do all this for money and that there's this money stream coming from Take Back Santa Cruz, which there's not. You know, one person wrote two $500 checks in the last year, Darius Motion. That's not me being in the pockets of anybody. Mm-hmm. This is easily now $150,000, budget for all these programs, including including Warming Center. So funding is hard to get because we're not crowned getting city or county funding, and that might even make it harder if we did. So what the magic that we're up to is going straight to the heart of unmet needs of people suffering outside, building programs not based on funding, but based on is how efficiently can we provide a service extremely well for everybody who comes in the door, and that's what we've been up to. And then we fund it with seed funding. It's been Herb Schmidt and Paul Lee helping us secure, little bits of seed funding for a fundraising dinner or Santa Cruz Gives, little things like that. Someone will do a birthday thing on Facebook that'll raise $1,500 here or there. So that's really how we've been making it. So we had you might know Roland Reveille. He's famous from the Reveille Family Shelter.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a philanthropist at the Homeless Services Center for decades on their board. He came for a tour a few days ago, looked at our program, and he said, listen to this quote, Robert. Are you hearing me?
Oh, I am, yeah.
Roland Reveille said, I'm going to put this on a T-shirt or something. This, Brent, is what I had hoped Homeless Services Center would be, but never had become, especially for all of this housing first mumbo jumbo.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. I like it.
He literally saw the value in all, this service, that service, that service, all integrated in a way that doesn't even require a person to give us an authentic name or an ID upon sitting on the property. That's a profoundly low barrier and extremely effective. Just basic services right where people need it. So anyway, he cut us a check for the conservative amount for the laundry service only, nothing else, just the laundry itself. I'm paying somewhere between $300 and $500 a week. Filling coins and machines.
How much is he giving you?
Somewhere between 15 and 25.
Now, is your budget transparent? I mean, if anybody wants to look at it, is it available?
Way more transparent than, for instance, Downtown Streets Team, which gets all the city money and has no budget viewable anywhere. Yeah, we have something on our website, warmingcenterprogram.com.
Mm-hmm.
Financials are hidden over to the right side. But that's last year's financials. We're still crunching the numbers, getting it done for 2019.
Now, for those I didn't mention before, that you also provide a warming center service, which...
Yeah, we were open this week twice.
And indeed, it's gotten pretty damn cold. Have you gotten many accounts of people suffering outside as a consequence of the weather?
Well, no, we were open Monday and Tuesday on the most extreme parts of this. You know, it got down to 36, forecast of 38 in the downtown core. Always complication. We want people to understand that there are many microclimates in Santa Cruz. We focus specifically on forecasts 2 days out in the downtown region. We look at the Cruz.io location of weatherunderground.com. We bumped up our temperature threshold to 39 degrees and then finally 40. So we opened with a forecast of 40 when our official limit is 38.
Well, I guess what I'm asking, Brent, is, and you know, I know that, and I think you get a lot of appropriate applause for that. You should. But of course, for the rest of the week, the other 5 days, you weren't open. And my question for you is, what accounts have you gotten about those days? Because, you know, both of us, I'm sure, are concerned, you more so, because you're actually doing something in a very concrete way about it. What about what happened the rest of those days? Have you heard anything about any stories you want to pass on about that might move or be, you know, educate the rest of us?
Well, mainly what occurs is we have to inform people who have now become expectant of a shelter. There is no winter shelter, and so we really need the community to understand that there's no nightly shelter for people. That should be our true community movement. We see lots of other community movements rather than that, like that bullshit on local activism, protest activism. But what I do get is a hotline. We deliver homeowners blankets and things like that. So we got a fair number of calls. But what we do is direct people to our location. So what's happening more than ever? There's been a shift in homelessness in Santa Cruz. People know that every single day, twice a day, they can get a blanket and hand warmers and a coat by just simply coming to our facility. So we saw, we're seeing a lot less desperation. Of course, in the downtown core, there are some people who don't mobilize this far up, which is really just one bridge away from downtown. For instance, like Cooper saying, Brent, we need stacks of blankets down here, and our report to them is no. We need to get people focusing on storage and getting things that they need during the daytime. At 2 in the morning when somebody's freezing, it's not an appropriate time for me to rush out. Let's get people focusing better on themselves, encourage people to do better, because our community to do better rather than the ultra lowest common denominator that the specter of someone freezing to death at 2 in the morning. And that's, we all need to raise our sights better than that sap story that we, you know, downtown, that turnout bombs is traipsing out. The 80 people who died, of course, we know only a third of those were outside. But, you know, let's really focus on what people need and delivering it to them.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm asking is, has there been, in terms of the actual need for the last week,
a warming center, that's what's been needed, and there hasn't been one. I mean, a winter shelter.
Mm. Is it more severe this winter than, say, last winter?
Oh, no, it's much milder this winter. In fact, the last winter has been surprisingly mild compared to what we experienced the last 10 previous winters. Extreme rain events, extreme cold snaps that would get down to 34, 32. The frost that we've seen, we're learning more now about dew points in the downtown core. You know, we've had three nights of that so far. On two nights we were open, to one night we weren't because the forecast didn't indicate it would be like that. But it's surprising. Like we keep raising our temperature threshold up. In fact, we're up from 36 degrees to now functionally 40 degrees, and we're opening less than we were three years and 4 years ago. So it's definitely milder.
Mm-hmm. Are you getting many people who are asking you, why aren't you open tonight, sort of thing, or not?
All the time.
No. I don't talk about activists. I'm talking about people who need a place to go.
Primarily, the people come to through our doors are taking really good care of themselves. People outside, right away, we just orient them towards the place where they can get blankets, warm clothing, socks, shoes, hand warmers, tarps, and ponchos. That's never been available before on the daily. Twice daily, people can get all of those items for free. Mm-hmm. It's hugely remarkable. The community at large really is not aware of it. It comes out of a budget that's just, you know, we just do it because.
Which is a good thing. That are you also saying that you're getting a considerable number of people who are looking for a place to be it indoors and who aren't getting it?
No. What's true is now more than ever, because of this, the ability to have a tent, way more people, few people were seeking shelter at the warming center than ever, because you got way more people who are taking good care of themselves in tents now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a new fascinating wrinkle where... Well, we expected to see way more people. What we ended up seeing were people who just want to be, they need gear for their tents.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, that's why the storage program is kind of like, has become more crucial than ever, because what we're doing is serving people who are actually fixed in tents and they're moving around a little bit. So it's a different dynamic than it had been.
Do you find many reports of police requiring people to leave their tents?
Not really. You know, we hear those are the stories of the people in the trouble spots, the people who are not playing well with their community. People who are camping, for instance, at Loudoun Nelson or at the post office or some of these other spaces. Definitely there was a cleanup along the levee. There was a cleanup on those alcoves on the River Street and Soquel Street, but they had been given a warning. And that's the thing, you know. If an officer, public service worker, or a ranger comes to the space and tells you, you know, it's time to clean up, I don't know what the protocol is. I would like to see them be given a written warning, a posting. But for the most part, what we're seeing are here, the few people are mainly in our region. And the 250 people on our shelves complain mainly about their stuff being stolen, not by officers, but by, you know, other people.
Are you saying, though, that so if a cop or a ranger gives someone a warning and they don't move, that's because they're not playing well with their community? Are you equating those two things?
I'm not equating that at all.
Okay, clarify that for me.
We're starting to get that in many cities, you know, we're down with the sweeps and all that. But what we're actually realizing is sweeps are a natural part of this homeless.
You mean you're down on the street sweeps? You're not down with the sweeps.
Yeah. How do you? So okay. If you're tenting, just realize it's not. You're not going to be there for long. In fact, it is clean. The more clean you are there, the better you are relating with your neighborhood, especially at night. I've been to that Loudoun Nelson camp, and they were screaming through the night. So it's just not playing well with the neighborhood. You see huge messes. The post office is that we know that's going to be there for a while, and then it's 1 week it's just going to be gone. So what we need to be doing as activists and advocates is encouraging people not to gather more than they need, and to keep things clean. Try to build have good community values with yourself and with your neighborhood, and then realize that at some point they're going to come through and clean us up. Be ready to have a fallback spot. Have a buddy, take care of each other, don't leave things unattended, and then when it's time to move, let's move like a community. And that's where we as advocates can help, and I don't see us doing that much, going down in there and helping them move. We shame the police, but do we actually help with our own sweat to help them move things down the street? Now that's kind of, that's what I'm calling out a little bit more. You know, shame on the police, but also shame on us, because we don't help that much other than just to...
Any reaction to Andy Mills' 7-point plan?
I don't call it Andy Mills' 7-point plan. I call it Condotti's plan. But I know he's now the mouthpiece for it. That's what he's being used for.
Mm-hmm.
He's out there, you know, stumping for it. But what we saw Condotti and the city staff creating it a few months ago.
Condotti is the city attorney.
Condotti had said that he was in touch with numerous other city managers and city attorneys as they were trying to find a way through. So it's information sharing. And then of course, it's the enforcement will be Mills, and I don't think he had much to consider. Of course, you know, he's in the room, and he's the. But I think it's more a city staff, city management.
Well, remember, he does come from San Diego and Eureka, where similar plans were put in place. It could be, as you're saying, that that was also the case, that the city attorneys in those places had a leading role, or it could be that he had a strong role. I'm not clear on that myself.
But Condotti said at a meeting 2 months ago, like practically, quote, he's been in touch with city attorneys up and down the state.
No, I believe it, yeah.
They've found some ways to work around this Martin versus Boise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although it's interesting that his plan has some similarities to what he did up in Eureka. I don't know what he did in San Diego. I haven't got any information
on it. Eureka was just a big cab cleanup, right? I mean, it wasn't... They didn't change their ordinance.
Well, they were sued in court up in Eureka, and he moved people to it was a camp cleanup, as I understand it, and my recollection is a little foggy here, but I think he moved them to a parking lot area, but then dispersed them all within a few months.
And I was up there, mm-hmm. and I saw the camp behind the shopping complex. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, pretty intense, like these jungle, quote-unquote jungle spaces in San Jose and other spaces. But when I researched it, you know, he was actually spent 6 months trying to not clean it up and saying, trying to get the city government to come up with a plan. He says, I don't want to move these people. There's no place to move them to. And they went on and on and on, and finally, he did a very strong eviction with no authentic places to move people to. But if you look at the news record, prior to the move, the cleanup, I thought he did a pretty good job of trying to resist cleanups.
Hmm. I know that the first.
I'm Andy Mills apologist here.
Yeah, well, I don't know. See, it depends whether you're talking about the spring of 2017 or when they were moved to a parking lot,
earlier than that.
Or later in 20, you know, in the fall when they were just apparently dispersed. Although there was no clear date of dispersal. Anyway, I don't have the information, so I can't really, you know, have it for you right now. You're getting this pittance from the city council, $15,000 on Tuesday.
This is still to be voted on again on Tuesday. Yeah,
that's true. Then now, have you? What kind of you were? You know, surprisingly resilient after what seemed like a lot of bad mouthing at the last city council meeting you got. Has there been any fallout, positive or negative, from that?
No. Mainly it's just. Well, all I've been doing is focusing on the new work we're doing, you know, getting the showers and the laundry doing well, getting ready to do a press release about the service center. We're also designing a casework program called Achievable Goals Casework, modeled on a national program called SMART Goals, which is not, you know, it's not a professional endeavor, but it really focuses on the basic five things that people are challenged with: housing, education, employment, addiction, mental health, and a few other things. And trying to get people to work with us, since we see them every week, to slowly get on a path towards something that they might want to shift, you know, within 3 months or so. So we'll talk about that. But in terms of funding, in terms of the quote-unquote allegations they get about Brent Adams, that was something that Herb Schmidt, Pauly, and Roland Rubley wanted to get into because it had something to do with our funding in Watsonville. We lost our church in Watsonville also, not just funding. So Warming Center in Watsonville is actually, was going to be difficult to manifest this year. We'll be revisiting it last year. But the question about Roland wanting to get down to this, you know, what's at the source of this story? And it's funny because there are seven allegations that we know of. I'm not going to list them here, but they're pretty much all hearsay or like Brent parties. You know, he drinks two beers at night.
Are you a beer drinker at night, Brent Adams?
It's funny, but but I told Roland Rebley, we went through the whole list of things. He was just busting out laughing the whole time. Even the off-color jokes that I told are not things that most people would deem as racist or inappropriate in the least bit. It's just when, you know, somebody says Brent said a thing. You know, it's true that I'm prickly. You know that. I've been extremely prickly with you.
No, I think you're not so much.
Take back Seneca, pretty much everybody under the sun. And a lot of that is, what are we really doing with homelessness? You know, here you are decades later, what are we really doing? The industry says they're ending homelessness through providing housing. That's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Activists make themselves quite busy, protest activists, but achieve very little over time. And I understand but what would it look like if we really dug our teeth into improving the lives of people on the daily? What would that look like? And what I see is people aren't really interested in that, and they'd actually be more comfortable with attacking my character than anything else. So if that's the name of the game, that's the world I live in now, I guess that's where you get to. Look at Drew Glover, you know, he says a few bizarre things. It's not like that defines him. He's ridiculously perfect for an extreme lefty on the council. He has voted fairly. There should be no recall election. There's virtually no grounds for it. Of course, they can get the number of signatures and force an election. That's what they've done. But on what basis? You know what I mean? So that's where we're at on the left here. We just kind of cannibalize ourselves a lot rather than focusing on the type of community we would like to see.
Well, I don't think the left is cannibalizing itself so much as, I mean, the people who are doing the recall are not on the left, so, you know.
They are, though. For the most part, they are, everybody in Santa Cruz, you know, I think 75% of us are liberal.
I've never thought.
Self-identified as Democrat.
But liberals are the most notorious anti-homeless people. I mean, they have all the excuses and all the bullshit that they've been passing on for 30 years. You know, I mean.
So they still see themselves as part of the left.
Well, that's nice. How are they really? Not how they see themselves. I mean, come on. Yeah,
That's why it's all kind of this weird space we're in now, where this quote-unquote leftmost silly that prides itself on all these environmental, you know, advances and how, you know, intellectual we are. But when it comes to social justice issues, people are still a little, you know, wobbly.
Well, it's not in my neighborhood kind of thing, I think, fundamentally.
Well, totally. I mean, look at Rafa. He's one of the guys on the
Catch.
And he started out as the classic NIMBY. He's not inviting people back to his neighborhood now. But I mean, it goes across the board. I'm part NIMBY. Everybody is part NIMBY. We're all fortunate not to have a 50-person drug-oriented homeless camp on our back fence. If we did, our point of view would change.
You waiting for a response from me on that one?
No. Because I've had that. They're up all night. It becomes a strange attractor. People coming from all over the region. I'm saying Salinas, Felton, just to come acquire, addictive consumables that often require theft and sale. You know, access to people selling their bodies and all kinds of all night behaviors that you just can't have. You know, in the space where you're living. And so you've got to have a lot of compassion for NIMBYs in a way, or empathy. So I've seen that now. I understand what it takes to strike balance on Felker Street, and we have struck this balance between people who sleep outside or who would be sleeping behind this fence have now elected to not sleep here. They could still put a tent up. They're putting tents up everywhere else. But now, because they respect the balance we're trying to strike with the neighborhood, with the landlords, so that we can keep doing this service. But it would be another conversation in your neighborhood or any other neighborhood. How do we, like, for instance, the people who were at Loudon Nelson before, and now many of them are over at the post office. What kind of community would the Russian or any of those other, you know, now they're going to have a lot of dwellings right across the street at that the new building. What's it going to be like? You know, how how do people live within view of a homeless encampment work together? It's not just about the needs of the homeless camp.
Well, I think the business improvement districts will...
The needs of the housed people. How do you strike a balance?
You know, it sounds nice when you put it that way, but when you look at how business improvement districts actually operate in cities, what you see is fundamentally, you know, it's a very kind of vicious, methodical, and, you know, financially oriented approach, which eliminates visible campgrounds. And they don't really care how they do it, I don't think.
But that's why I say the distinction, what you're talking about is a one-sided dynamic that doesn't take in consideration the needs of the people camping.
But that's what's happening. See, that's the point.
Sure. But what I'm trying to say is here we've struck the balance to allow both parties to be heard. And what has occurred is that the people in tents have decided to camp anywhere else but not within view of this building. And that's why Roland Reveille doubled down on helping us, because he's like, wow, it actually works. You don't have security. You don't have a fence. You don't have a gun. The cops aren't helping you. And you've created balance within this neighborhood. And it has been difficult to do that. It wasn't because the neighborhoods came out to clash with the tents or yell at them. It was just simply us standing in the middle of two interests and trying to get both to understand the needs of the other. On the people who are camping, they get this huge benefit of having all these services right in front, right in their neighborhood. But the people camping have decided to not put their tents in view of these houses.
But I think that's primarily because of the fact, as you just said, that your position is pretty unique. Unlike even the navigation centers in the large cities and the different kinds of pseudo services or very partial restrictive services that are run in Santa Cruz. In other words, the idea that, all we have to do is sort of work out the interests of these people, I think really, I don't want to call it necessarily naive, but it's a very sort of... you're in a specialized situation there because you've taken, a decade of your life to put together this program you have and are trying to, expand, and I think properly so. But that's not what the majority, I think, of the social service poverty pimps want to do, or the police are interested in doing, or the city council wants to do.
What about the New Heroes team? You got three officers paid full time now on the Forbes group. You probably heard of them if you haven't seen them yet. They made the tour around to all of the homeless, all of the services. They've gone to all the encampments. They couldn't be nicer. We know who they really are, though. They're armed police, and that's who they actually are. They're not some special team authentically.
I suspect they're gathering intelligence and information to eventually, as you pointed out, move the camps, usually with a shelter pretext of some kind.
For the first time ever, they came into my space. They couldn't have been more demonstrating an aim towards proactivity. We've seen cops here before. They come as cops. These guys came as more of a public relations team. How do we make it work? We want to make it work for everybody.
You are good at public relations, Brent, and so are they. You know, I don't give a shit about public relations.
The funny thing is when we compare Homeless Services Center that used to be called and our new services center here, and you compare our neighborhood interactions and their neighborhood. Now, you know, we're blessed not to have that situation down over here. We easily could, because we literally are right there on the tracks. We're on the levee.
But you are providing services that the homeless lack a services center or the housing mutters people are not. And the people that are your clients, and there are many, many of them, know that. And that is the reason for that. And the fact is, you know, I don't think it's so easy or so likely that these other groups are going to pick up on what you're doing, which I think they should, but they're not.
Hold on, Robert. Let's try to open an account. We'll have one thing to start with. Give her blankets, floor pads, whatever.
We'll talk about a second thing, but we got to work on the 90-day situation right now.
No, you're doing great, but you've been giving me more than an hour. Why don't you sum up, and I will we'll put it out, and we'll continue the conversation as the days roll on.
Well, I guess what we're up to is a renewed relationship with this our collective challenge of homelessness. You, I, somebody in Take Back Santa Cruz, a police officer, a business owner, a homeowner, we all kind of are in it together. Someone sleeping in a tent. It's our community. It's our collective challenge. What would it look like if we were going to be more proactive and meet the needs of all everybody rather than just the needs of the homeowner or the cops or a business or someone sleeping in a tent? And I think we could strike that balance. Homeless Service Center has kind of left the services behind them. So, you know, our announcement quite soon, a Footbridge Services Center, we're very proud. You can access it at 150 Felker Street, Suite H. We're open every day between 8 and 10 a.m. and 5 to 7. We do laundry every Wednesday. It's called Laundry Weekly. Turn it in our 13-gallon bag any day before Wednesday. Get it after Wednesday. Showers take place now between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. It's the hottest shower, the longest shower, 20 minutes hot water. We have soap and towels. You can access all of our other programs at that time. The hotline is 246-1234. Warming Center Program at Gmail, warmingcenterprogram.com. Thanks for the conversation.
All right. I expect to hear more mints and croissant next time I talk to you.
Yep.
Thanks, man.
Later.
And that was Brent Adams of the previously called the Warming Center and the Day and Night Storage, now called the Footbridge something program. And again, if you want to reach Brent, you can call him at the Warming Center program at 588-9892, or just to get more information directly for the other programs, 246-1234.